me in your Bibles, please, to Job chapter 9. Job chapter 9, verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. Then Job answered and said, I know it is so of a truth, but how should a man be just with God? If he will contend with him, he cannot answer him one of a thousand. He is wise in heart and mighty in strength, who hath hardened himself against him and hath prospered, which removeth the mountains, and they know not, which overturneth them in his anger, which shaketh the earth out of her place, and the pillars thereof tremble, which commandeth the sun, and it riseth not, and sealeth up the stars, which alone spreadeth out the heavens, and treadeth upon the waves of the sea, which maketh Arcturus, Orion, and Pleiades, and the chambers of the south, which doeth great things, past finding out, yea, and wonders without number. Lo, he goeth by me, I see him not. He passeth on also, but I perceive him not. Behold, he taketh away. Who can hinder him? Who will say unto him, What doest thou? If God will not withdraw his anger, the proud helpers do stoop under him. How much less shall I answer him and choose out my words to reason with him, whom, though I were righteous, yet I would not answer, but I would make supplication to my judge. If I had called, and he had answered me, yet would not I believe that he had hearkened unto my voice, for he breaketh me with a tempest, and multiplieth my wounds without cause. He will not suffer me to take my breath, but filleth me with bitterness. If I speak of strength, lo, he is strong, and if of judgment, who shall set me a time to plead? If I justify myself, mine own mouth shall condemn me. If I say I am perfect, it shall also prove me perverse. Though I were perfect, yet would I not know my soul. I would despise my life. This is one thing, therefore I said it. He destroyeth the perfect and the wicked. If the scourge slay suddenly, he will laugh at the trial of the innocent. The earth is given into the hand of the wicked. He covereth the faces of the judges thereof. If not, where and who is he? Now my days are swifter than a post. They flee away. They see no good. They are passed away as the swift ships, as the eagle that hasteth to the prey. If I say I will forget my complaint, I will leave off my heaviness and comfort myself. I am afraid of all my sorrows. I know that thou wilt not hold me innocent. If I be wicked, why then labor I in vain? If I wash myself with snow water and make my hands never so clean, yet shalt thou plunge me in the ditch, and mine own clothes shall abhor me. For he is not a man as I am, that I should answer him, and we should come together in judgment. Neither is there any daysman betwixt us that might lay his hand upon us both. Let him take his rod away from me, and let not his fear terrify me. Then would I speak and not fear him. But it is not so with me. May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. Job is answering Bildad here. Bildad in chapter 8 has accused Job of some pretty tough things. He has called him a hypocrite. He has said that if the Lord would take his children away, what answer could he have to that? And so on. And so Job begins then this chapter agreeing with Bildad on a particular point, that is, that God does not pervert judgment. I agree. I know it is so of a truth that God does not pervert judgment, that it is the wicked that he slays. But then Job goes on to talk to Bildad and to the three friends about what righteousness truly is. And in so doing, Job reveals himself again, as he will over and again, to be a man, not a hypocrite, but a man of faith. Struggling mightily with his faith, without a doubt, speaking unadvisedly from time to time, without a doubt, and yet also, in the midst of his unadvised speech, saying things that are indeed great gospel truths. And so here he says, I know it is so of a truth that God will not pervert justice. Yes, I understand that, but let me ask you a question, he says. How shall a man be just with God? If God would not pervert justice, then tell me how a man could be just with God. And Job here recognizes his own sins. He recognizes his own weakness. He recognizes the frailness and imperfection of all flesh before God. Job 9 is a great chapter that teaches us how that the best of our efforts are imperfect and defiled in the sight of God. It matters not how good we think we have done. It never rises to the level of perfection that God requires for acceptability with Him. And so here is indeed the great dilemma. If God will not pervert justice, how can men be just with Him? It is a sobering truth. It is indeed against everything that the natural man believes. And it is true. If God would not pervert justice, and He will not, how can a man be just with God? So Job goes on to prove his propositions, or this proposition, this base proposition, with many other propositions. First of all, he goes on to speak of God's power. He talks about the mountains, how God takes them away at His pleasure. He talks about the earth and how the Lord shakes it. He commands the sun. He seals up the stars. He spreads out the heavens. He treads upon the waves of the sea. He has made the constellations, Arcturus, Orion, Pleiades, the chambers of the south. He does great things past finding out, wonders without number. Who would respond? Who would reply to that God? And so Job teaches us by way of flipping that on its head, that those who would answer to God, those who would reply to God, have done something that they ought not. They have created another God in their own image, that they would bargain with Him. There is no bargaining with Him. And so then, Job now draws it in, not only from the overarching strength and might and righteousness of God, now he draws it to his own abasement. He says, how can a man be just with God? Look at who he is. How can a man be just with God? Look at who I am. And so he says, whom though I were righteous, yet I would not answer. I would make supplication to my judge. In other words, I think there's an ellipsis here. When he says, though I were righteous, he's speaking of being outwardly righteous. Maybe that he knows that he has a conscience void of offense. And yet, even in that, Job says, I would not approach him as an equal. I would make supplication to my judge. I would plead for his mercy, even though I were righteous, that is, outwardly righteous. He goes on to speak about his own abasement. If a righteous man could not speak against him, what about me? Because he has broken me with a tempest. He has crushed me in the dust. How is it that I could reply unto him? You might think another man might, but myself? No, it is impossible. Though I were perfect, yet would I not know my soul. I would despise my life. What God requires is so far beyond my understanding, Job says. I wouldn't know it. So then, in verse 22, Job, I think, and commentators are divided on this, it's a difficult passage in verse 22 when Job says, this one thing, therefore I said it, he destroyeth the perfect and the wicked. If the scourge slay suddenly, he will laugh at the trial of the innocent. The earth is given into the hand of the wicked. He covereth the faces of the judges thereof. If not, where and who is he? Verses 22 through 24. Is this Job merely observing what goes on in the world, like the psalmist is in Psalm 73, perhaps, saying, you know, I beheld the wicked and there's no bands in their death. Looks like they're having a great time. The Lord does elevate the wicked. And so Job here says, this one thing, therefore, I said it, he destroyeth the perfect and the wicked. There is no difference before God. Is he merely looking out over the providential dealings and our ignorance pertaining to them, or is he going a little too far and charging God with some folly here in that the Lord makes no distinctions between men and men? I rather think the latter, and there are many commentators that think the former. I think Job goes a little too far here in his speech when he says, this one thing, therefore I said it, he destroyeth the perfect and the wicked. If the scourge slay suddenly, he will laugh at the trial of the innocent. I think that's too far. I think Job has gone too far here in charging God with injustice. And so Job is still chargeable, even in the midst of his faith. And don't we see this in ourselves? Don't we see that when we have, even possessing the faith that we possess, it is possible in times of distress, in times of difficulty, for us to charge God, to go beyond the bounds of propriety, to leave off saying with the Apostle Paul, I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me, and we say, I can't. Which really sometimes means I won't. So I believe Job here goes a little too far. I believe that in the midst of his distress that he is, as Durham says, in a fever, that he's venting a little farther than he ought, that he is speaking unadvisedly and charging God with injustice. All right, so then in verses 25 through the end of the chapter, he speaks of his going away, that he is nigh unto death, and that there is no remedy for him. Again, he is in that there is, and he speaks that there is no remedy for him. He has gone beyond the bounds of propriety. He says, I am afraid of all my sorrows. I know that thou wilt not hold me innocent. If I be wicked, why then labor I in vain? Notice he is telling Bildad and his other visitors that he is continuing to pray. He is continuing to petition God. And yet, it is as if it is vain. He is going the way of all flesh. His life is fleeing swiftly away. Verse 30, Job speaks of his own abasement again in these mixed sort of speeches where Job is now speaking rightly about his own sins. If I wash myself with snow water and make my hands never so clean, yet shalt thou plunge me in the ditch and mine own clothes shall abhor me. And he speaks of the need that he has of a mediator. And yet, in speaking of that need, what does he say? There is no mediator. Again, Job is speaking rashly here. But he's moving in and out of gospel truths, isn't he? And yet in some of his speech, he moves beyond what is reasonable. And still, he teaches us, even in this difficult time, that we too have a need of a mediator. That washing our hands with snow water, you know what snow water is. That's the cleanest water he knew. It's the cleanest water that he had at his disposal. Make my hands never so clean, yet thou shalt plunge me in the ditch, and mine own clothes shall abhor me. Now, some commentators are a little harder on Job here than I would be. And they would say that Job is speaking here that God is, again, unjust. That a man could be as clean as he could be, and yet God would not receive him. Because he's speaking of God's injustice. I don't think that's what he's doing here. I think he is recognizing the sinfulness of men and the defiledness of all flesh. And he is shut up to the need of a daysman, of a mediator, to take hold of both God and man. And yet, in his despair, he cannot yet see that daysman. He will later. He will later. Let's stand and continue praising God then in the singing of